We're talking about food preservation and women farmers with our guests today. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Joining me in the studio are Lisa Kivarist and Della Enns. Lisa's been with us before to talk about Soil Sisters Weekend. And she wrote the award-winning book, Soil Sisters, A Toolkit for Women Farmers. Her other publications include Homemade for Sale and Farmstead Chef. She runs In Serendipity Farm. And Della runs Scotch Hill Farm with her family. They raise certified organic vegetables, herbs, and flowers for their CSA. They are both involved in Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service. How do you preserve food from your garden or farmer's market? Do you have a question about ways to preserve? Join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Lisa, thanks for being back with us.
Thank you, Jill.
And Della, welcome. This is the first time you've been with us, right?
First time on this show.
Okay, wonderful. So, Della, why don't you tell us about your farm? And I got the name. I kind of shortened it on you.
Right.
Yeah.
It's Scotch Hill Farm. It has been for 25 years, but we've added Innisfree Farm Stay.
Okay.
And we actually sold our farm to our son and moved down the road to another house, which is Innisfree. So, and we're still growing organic vegetables and beautiful flowers and...
But you're concentrating on the inn part of it, right?
That's
now?
New, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Lisa, tell us about your farm and inn.
Sure. So we run In Serendipity Farm and Bed and Breakfast outside of Monroe. And yeah, we're in our 21st season now. So we, like Della, grow a lot of different things and now serve it in breakfast form in a muffin or other. And we also do a lot on our farm with renewable energy. We recently shifted from being powered by the wind to solar, but are all about green energy and making that happen.
That's wonderful. It just amazes me every time we have the Soil Sisters Weekend coming up and we have a guest with you, Lisa, the things that you all do on your farm, it's like you keep adding and more and more and more and more. How do you get all that done?
I think we're a good influence on each other, Della, wouldn't you say? Because when Della moved to her new farmhouse and there were extra rooms, we started saying, hey, Della, you know, I bet people would want to stay. So we've got a real good support structure. And it's one of those great examples of collaborative businesses, particularly in our rural area. When we support each other, they all grow. So that helps a lot.
Sure. And you're both involved in the Midwest Organic Sustainable Education Service, which is MOSES for short. Good thing. That's a very long name. What does that organization do, and what do each of you do in that organization?
I'm on the board of directors for MOSES, and it's a wonderful, wonderful organization to help farmers grow organically and sustainably. And this is a growing market. We're working more with grain farmers now than we ever have before. And so we help any kind of farmer who wants to be organic and or transition to organic, learn about organic. The conference in February in La Crosse is a huge conference, and you can learn so much there. So there are many, many things. And this summer, then there's workshops going on all over the Midwest, sponsored by MOSES and other groups, including our In Her Boots workshop.
Okay. And Lisa, you're involved in that? Area.
Yeah, I have worked with MOSES now for almost 10 years and lead their In Her Boots project. So we are one of the few, if not the only, sustainable ag nonprofits that have a dedicated year-round program to women farmers. Women make up one of the fastest-growing groups of new farmers, particularly are driving the sustainable and organic movement, but not a lot of resources. So we focus on that and create ways to support women, particularly women who want to start new farm and food businesses. But yeah, we're very modest in Wisconsin, even at this time of abundance of growing things, that we really are leading the organic farming movement. I mean, the rest of the country looks at Wisconsin and MOSES as far as both volume and production and resources for folks who want to start farms.
Yes. And Wisconsin is one of the top organic producers in the country. So I don't think people realize that.
Yeah, I think I did read that somewhere, and it is amazing.
We're number one and two in dairy and meat. Well, number one in produce is California. Fine.
They're
slightly
bigger.
Longer
they're
growing
bigger.
Season, but we are number two, so yeah. It's all good.
Darn California, they're always stomping on us, I tell you. If people wanted to know more information about that organization, where can they find that?
MOSES is mosesorganic.org, and there's a ton of free resources. Even if you're not farming professionally, but an enthusiastic gardener or harbor this dream of starting to sell something, it's a great first step.
Yeah, definitely. Now, next week has been declared Wisconsin Women in Sustainable and Organic Agriculture Week by the governor. You know, kind of narrowing down that a little bit, but why was that important for you to get that declaration?
We, as women, particularly women in agriculture, growing things is hardly anything new. Do you know, when I talk about this new group of women farmers, it sounds so hip and modern, but we've been growing food and feeding our families for forever. But the issue is recognition, both from an economic and a policy perspective. And that's what's really been changing, particularly in the last 10 years. And we want to celebrate that, but even more so, we want to encourage other women to consider careers in agriculture, particularly here in Wisconsin. So that declaration and the celebration next week leading up to Soil Sisters is exactly that, both a celebration, but hopefully a little encouragement as well.
Okay. And you mentioned Soil Sisters, so let's get into that right now. That's coming up, like you said, the end of next week, correct? That starts the 3rd of August,
Friday.
Is that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, people might not know. What is Soil Sisters? Tell us about it. Go ahead, Della.
Oh, we're a group of women farmers from the southern part of the state, mostly green in Rock County, a few in Lafayette. We slop over a little bit, and we came together in the beginning with potlucks and just to interact and to find each other. And Lisa's been just incredibly instrumental in moving us forward. And now we have this weekend, and it's the largest women weekend. Tell us, Lisa.
Well, it's the largest women farmer-led event of its kind. So there's a number of different ways for folks to come out. It all started really on that education note of wanting to open our barn doors and invite folks out, particularly kids and young women, to see what we're all about. And that has really grown. Now we're in our 7th year. So it takes place Friday through Sunday. There's a variety of on-farm workshops. You can do everything from learn how to bake bread at Della's house to learn how to start a food business at ours, and various culinary events. There's pizza nights. There's farm-to-table dinners. And on Sunday, August 5th, there's a farm tour. So that's a day where folks can come out, and it's all free, open to the public that day. Come out and see some farms, but it's all about sharing what we do.
And so they can go to our website,
soilsisterswi.org, and the whole Soil Sisters event is a project of the Wisconsin Farmers Union in partnership with a bunch of other great organizations at a time to celebrate the abundance in Wisconsin.
It sounds like it. Now, you said most of the events are free, but there are some that charge, so you should go to the website and
check
it out.
Yeah, the workshops.
The classes.
And those are filling up, so please do.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Now, one of the classes that you're going to be teaching is going to be preservation or preserving food, which is kind of what we want to talk a little bit about today. What can people learn at that particular event or workshop?
Sure. So there's a couple of on-farm workshops. There's one at Raleigh's Hillside Farm, and there's one at the Old Smith Place that go into more of the specifics. But it really all focuses on ways that we can use what we have in such glorious abundance right now. So come the winter season in dear Wisconsin, we can keep eating locally and seasonally. So there's lots of different ways to preserve, and Della and I have different approaches. It really depends on what you like to do and what you like to eat and what your family likes to eat, and how can you put all those together? Because in today's busy world, I think people's initial reaction is, that takes so much time. I don't have time. But with a little bit of knowledge, take a workshop, you know, chat with folks, get a good canning book, and you're on your way. And it's so empowering to know not only did I preserve that, but I can eat that year round.
And right. I know exactly where it came from.
Yep.
That's always nice. Della, what are some of your favorite ways to do the preserving? I mean, people think canning right away, but that's not the only thing, is it?
No, it's not. And canning's a lot of work, but
yes.
But it's great, you know, in the winter when you can go back and you've got all those jars of tomato sauce. But We do a lot of drying of our foods, too, as well as freezing. But drying is really an interesting way to preserve food. And you can use a little electric food dryer, but we've actually built a solar dryer that we use outside. And it's full, mine is full of Tulsi right now. I'm drying it's a basil for tea.
Okay.
And so I'll get that out and put tomatoes in probably later today.
So how long does it take with the sun compared to an actual dehydrator that you'd plug in?
On days like we have right now, not much longer.
Okay.
There's a thermometer, and you just monitor the thermometer. It depends on what you're drying. Like the something light, like the basil leaves, will dry quickly. It'll be dry in 24 hours or less. The tomatoes might take 2 days.
Okay. Now, if someone is listening who's never done this before, would it make more sense for them to actually just get a dehydrator?
Absolutely.
Start out. Okay.
Yep. Start out small. See if you like doing it.
Yeah. And what are some good things to put into a dehydrator?
I absolutely, my favorite thing is tomatoes because the flavor is retained. Mm-hmm. And you know how yucky winter tomatoes from Florida are. So
yeah.
Even though the dried tomatoes are a little leathery, their texture is different. The flavor is so amazing. It tastes like summer. And you can, we put the dried tomatoes on our salads in the winter, but you could throw them into your sauces or anything. And yeah, dried tomatoes are awesome.
So basically like the sun-dried tomatoes that
right.
you can get in a restaurant or in the store. It's pretty much the same.
Right. And at my farm, we have a lot of scratch and dent tomatoes. So it's a good way to use something that's not saleable.
And how do you store those dehydrated that produce then once they're dry?
There are several ways. I put them in Ziploc in the freezer if I think it's going to be a long time, or in jars on the counter or in the cabinet.
I mean, the important thing is to make sure they are completely dry.
Dry, yeah.
If they're mold otherwise.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, Lisa, do you do dehydrating or how do your preserving?
We primarily freeze. Partly motivated, actually a lot motivated by time in the summer and lack of it. So I can quickly blanch greens. I can quickly process things like broccoli. And for tomatoes, for example, I don't process them all the way. I basically just juice the tomatoes, put them through a Victoria strainer. So I take out the seeds and the skin, and then I freeze in freezer containers what's still pretty juicy. It's not a sauce. But then come the winter months when I want something simmering, I'll defrost that and then let that slow simmer into sauce on the wood stove. So that works because it's fast, and I've adapted these tricks to make it go even faster. But the other thing, too, that's important about food preservation is everybody likes to do different things, and you can swap with each other. So when Della just said she was drying that Tulsi tea, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm still buying that stuff at the co-op. I'm going to hit her up for some and offer something else. So there's that dynamic to it that makes it both fun and much more time efficient.
Okay, well, you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about women farmers, the Soil Sisters Weekend, and preserving food with Lisa Kivirist and Della Enns. Give us a call. Our lines are open. Do you have any questions about preserving food or maybe what's coming up on the Soil Sisters Weekend or what it's like to be a woman farmer? Our number, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Right now, we're talking about women farmers and preserving food. If you have a question, now's the time to ask the experts, 1-800-642-1234. Lisa, earlier you had talked about the fact that you are busy preserving and maybe not eating as much as you should.
I've learned that I can get in squirrel mode and start making my pickles or freezing my broccoli and forget that the most important thing to do is eat fresh and enjoy it right now when it's at its peak. And when we start getting tired of something, when the tomato's not looking that exciting, then go into the food preservation mode. And the other thing I've learned is to eat up what we preserve every year, which sounds obvious, but it's pretty obvious when we look at it from a freezer perspective. I mean, frozen zucchini is not red wine. It doesn't get better year to year. So we have a large chest freezer. We fill it up with all the produce. And then we literally play a game in our house where we have to eat through that whole thing before we can buy anything new. And it works because it, A, saves us a lot of money. And B, in the winter, when we have some time, we can get creative with what's there. Because, yeah, the frozen kale is not looking exciting come February.
No.
But that's when, all right, we developed a recipe. We have in our Farmstead Chef cookbook for a spanakopita, a Greek spinach pie using local Wisconsin feta. And you've got time to play with that. But then we literally unplug the freezer, we clean it out, and then we start fresh. And that's the best way to do it because, again, it's meant to be seasonal particularly for things that you would freeze.
That's really a great idea because you put so much time and effort into preserving them. You don't want them to go bad. Speaking of going bad, let's go to the phones. We have Connie from Portage with a question. Hi, Connie.
Hello. I can my tomatoes, and I canned 44 quarts 2 years ago, and it lasted pretty well. But I'd like to know how long they can last so that I could maybe can 3 bushels instead so I wouldn't have to can every year.
What do you think, Della?
I keep mine more than 1 year. I think probably the rules say 1 year, but yeah, and always test the tops. Make sure that the tops are staying sealed. That's the most important thing.
Definitely, definitely. And probably, Connie, you could call your UW Extension agent in your county, and they would be able to tell you what the official rules are anyway. Not that we have to follow them exactly. Yeah, I said that in the air. Sorry about that. Okay, let's go now to Gail in De Pere. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have actually a two-part question. I've been a baked gardener for years and do a lot of my own freezing and canning. But this year, or last fall, I planted 50 cloves of garlic, so I'm going to have an abundance of garlic. And I'm wondering, the best, other than keeping the bulbs, what's another good way I could preserve them? And then the second part is, this is the first year I'm growing dry beans. I'm growing Vermont cranberry and I think Jacob's cattle. I know when to pick them, but I need to know the best way to keep them so, you know, they're dry and they'll work well and, you know, baked beans and other recipes.
Okay, thanks, Gail. Who wants to take that, Lisa?
I can take the garlic.
Okay.
One thing I'm trying this summer is pickled garlic. There's a recipe in the Ball Canning Book. A friend of Della and ours, Betty Anderson at the Old Smith Place, she'll be teaching one of the canning workshops during Soul Sisters, turned me onto that. She's been selling them at the New Glarus Farmers Market, and it is exactly what it is. It's pickled garlic, but it's a little side dish to, you know, add onto some sandwiches and things during the winter, but I had never thought of that. And we have some friends, some women farmer friends down in Greene County, too, who are fermenting garlic, which is a whole other area to go into, too. But you can basically ferment anything.
Wow.
And that, again, could be used as a side or something you could have all winter long that uses the garlic, but in a different way.
Interesting.
On the garlic, too, pesto. I mean, we make pesto, all kinds of pesto, not just with basil, but with all kinds of other green. Cilantro pesto is amazing. So that's a good way to use your garlic. And then I just put it like in an ice cube tray and freeze little cubes and put them in a baggie and then you can pop out just what you need.
Yeah, great idea. And the beans.
Make sure they're good and dry when you shell them out. And then I usually store those in a jar with a lid, but you could do a Ziploc or something like that too.
And the key again there is make sure they're dry. Okay.
But Gail, come visit because we're all kindred spirits. She's got the right attitude about food preservation. Yeah. Every year's different. You try different things. You ask questions and it's a lot of fun.
And you need to make it fun so it's not a chore. So next up we've got Maggie from Prairie Farm. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, great program. So my partner and I have a primarily flower farm in western Wisconsin, but although that's our business, kind of are really passionate about growing our own food and preserving and getting really close to just not having to buy in any produce throughout the entire year. So we do a lot of canning and drying and freezing. So we're doing a lot of it already, but my question for you would be, if there's anything that comes to mind that's kind of unconventional or maybe that you wouldn't normally think of to can or preserve that's worked out really well and that you love to do.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I love to make pickled Brussels sprouts. That they are really good. And it just kind of depends on what your overabundance is, what you're going to end up trying to preserve. There's a book called The Joy of Canning, and it has some really wonderful recipes. And if you find a brine or, you know, something that works well in one thing, it'll work with another vegetable too, so you can get creative. Curried cauliflower, that's really yum. So there's endless possibilities.
Oh, sure. Use your imagination. What about you,
That's
Lisa?
Two things. I do a lot of simple syrups. So I'll take particularly herbs. I just made a batch with our chocolate mint last night and just basically boil sugar and water to make a simple syrup and then let it sit with the mint leaves overnight in a larger canning jar, drain the leaves out, and then you have a syrup, which you can freeze very easily, and you can have some nice iced tea in the middle of the winter. The other thing I do is infuse vodka. So when those two kind of go together, particularly when you're tired of a certain fruit or the raspberries are going crazy, that's super simple. Again, you just basically put the fruit and some sugar in a vodka, let it sit, and come Christmas when you're ready for something warm, that will be ready for you.
Well, like cherry bounce. Yeah.
There you go. There you go. No one's going to say no to that, I don't think. Next, we've got Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I wanted to share, if I could share several things. We make tomato juice, many quarts of it. Probably, I think last year we made 80 quarts of it.
Goodness.
And what we do is we use a food service line pan that is 20 inches long by 12 inches wide by 6 inches deep. It's big, stainless steel pan. We fill it with tomato, we wash, and if any trimming is needed, but basically just wash and fill it with whole tomatoes, all the varieties that we grow in the garden. So there's cherry tomatoes, red and yellow, and large slicers, and just so that we get many flavors combined together. And we bake that in the oven at 350 until the tomatoes are softened and begin to caramelize, which really brings out the flavor.
Yes.
And we run it through an OXO food mill with on the fine screen, and that takes out all the seeds and the skin, and it makes this incredibly delicious, full-flavored, sweet, without any kind of bitterness to it, tomato juice. And that keeps for, we can it hot, we heat it, and keep the juice and can it in a hot water bath. And that'll keep for years on the shelf. We're still eating, you know, drinking from several years ago.
Oh, well, there answers the other listener question, too.
and then in freezing, we grow really delicious sweet peppers, and we just feed the seeds to the chickens, chop up the peppers into, you know, into bite-sized pieces, and then put them in vacuum-sealed plastic bags and vacuum-seal them and freeze them. And we don't do any blanching. We just cut them up and package. Well, we spread them, actually. We put them in the bags but not sealed, and freeze them. And then once they're frozen, then we seal them, vacuum seal them, so that they don't get all squished and the juice doesn't squish out.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for
those are great. I'm drooling over that tomato juice.
Yeah, it does sound really good, doesn't it?
And you raise a really good idea too. Enthusiastic food preservers like we all are about the biggest DIY hackers is figure out what you're doing. And when you mentioned that, like a stainless
pan,
a larger scale pan, is look for things like that. You know, I mean, there's things in restaurant supply stores that one small purchase will make things so much easier down the road.
St. Finney's,
you can find a ton of that stuff, and it adds up in the long run. Awesome.
Well, Grant emailed, and he wonders, what is the best way to freeze summer sweet corn?
Well,
I just eat all mine.
I was thinking the same thing. But
we blanch it, and you take a tube pan, stick it in there, cut it off the cob, and it falls into the tube pan.
Like a bundt pan.
Yeah, so it's not so messy.
Yep.
And put it in freezer bags.
Mm-hmm. Now, our listener before had mentioned about she doesn't blanch hers. Are there rules about what should and shouldn't be blanched as far as vegetables go?
There's specifics by varietal, and that's where a good canning book, or there's tons of information on extension by vegetables. It often has to do with how long you're going to preserve it for, and how you're going to use it in the end run. I was just, and I'm always looking them up again because it's easy to forget. I was processing green beans, and yeah, they recommended if I'm going to eat them in the next 6 months, I can freeze them straight. But you know what? I can't guarantee that. So in that case, I went through the blanching method. But there's a variety of options, but it just depends on sometimes how much time you have and the resources.
Yeah, exactly. I've done that with tomatoes too. Just throw them in the freezer bag, throw them in the freezer until I can get to them to process them.
Literally, we've done that. Like, just take the whole tomato and core it and wash it. I just stick the whole tomatoes on a cookie sheet, freeze them, and then put them in a bag. And then, yeah, when December rolls around, let them slowly defrost and cook them then.
When you have a little more time.
Right.
Totally.
Right. Okay. Well, we've got lots of calls. Mike is next in Greenbush. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I grew up eating pickles, and I found a pickle maker at a farmer's market who had a fairly expensive quart of pickles. And I said, why are they so expensive? And she said, because they're addictive. You know, I was skeptical. I said, well, I'll try a quart. And I don't know enough about pH, but when I tried these pickles, it literally was addictive. And I asked her, what was the secret? And she said, it's the pH. She found this recipe on a Czechoslovakian church recipe book on the floor of an abandoned house in Kewaunee, and she never knew what was in it, and she wouldn't tell me anything other than pH. Is there much of a pH level where it basically hits that sweet spot for human pH and equaling the pickle pH? Because these things, I bought them by case. I mean, it was the best pickle I've ever had in my life.
And oh my goodness.
I'd like to find out what it was that made it so addictive.
Well, that's a story from one of the best farmer marketing stories I've ever heard. Good for her and good for you. Well, one thing that I can comment on is she is selling under Wisconsin's pickle bill, most likely, which basically means it's a great opportunity for farmers and anybody who's got a good pickle recipe that qualifies as a high acid item that you can process in your home kitchen using an approved recipe. And then you can sell with certain labeling at the farmer's market like she is. So that's enabling some different recipes to get out there. I don't know, Del, if you've got thoughts on the pH bit.
I don't. I don't really know what that would be. I do know, according to the pickle bill, you're supposed to use the Ball Book of Canning, and that recipe's probably not in it, but there's not
you can
pickle
get,
police
there's
checking.
Different ways to get recipes checked, which I'm hoping, assuming this wonderful pickle marketer did, because there is a clear safety guidelines on pickling, and that would have to do with the acidity level and making sure that everything's there. And that's where it's important to realize that if a recipe is an older recipe, it definitely needs to be tested. And that's why I always get the new version of the Ball Canning book, because things are changing. Mm-hmm. And just because grandma made this tomato sauce recipe 50 years ago, well, our tomatoes were different and they had different levels of acidity. So it is important to keep current on things as well. You can always have recipes tested or work with a master canner to make sure that what you're doing is safe and tasty.
And tasty. That's important. Okay. Well, good luck in finding that pH balance, Mike. Up next, we have Liz in Viroqua. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I have a beginning El Cheapo way to do some solar drying of fresh herbs.
Excellent. Tell us about it.
Put them in a paper bag, park your car in the sun, and you wouldn't believe how fast they dry. Oh. I grow Greek oregano, and it's fabulous dried that way. But I'm going to try to get one of those solar ovens. That sounds great.
Well, you can look that up on Pinterest or YouTube and get the directions to make the solar food dryer.
They're pretty simple, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Ours is, we made a collector out of beer cans.
Beer cans, of course. What else are you going to do with them, right? Well, great. Thanks for sharing that with us, Liz. We'll go to Catherine in La Crosse next. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. My question is about preserving zucchini. I have done it a couple of different ways. I've chopped it up and frozen it in chunks and then made stews out of it. I've shredded it and then, frozen that. I've made breads and then frozen the breads or eaten the breads right away. And I'm just wondering if you have some what your favorite way to preserve zucchini is. And I have heard also if you put salt on it, it kind of helps get the water out. And I'm wondering if you recommend that. I don't want my food to taste salty, though. So
Catherine's saying she's got a lot of zucchini. That's very unusual, isn't it?
How rare.
How rare is that? lot.
So, you know, it's funny. When we first moved to the farm, the first year we couldn't germinate zucchini, which is still embarrassing. The second year we grew so much and I was feeling so happy squirrel-like that I think I preserved basically an entire freezer full of zucchini, which is like 90% water, to your point, Liz. So zucchini is tricky because it's in such abundance, but it is such a high water content. One thing that I have done is basically cook the zucchini and then puree it. So it's kind of like a mush, but it's perfect for soups. And then I just freeze that unflavored and then we'll use that in soups in the winter. That's one way. I also, like you mentioned, do a bunch of zucchini breads now and then freeze those for the winter. But it's a texture thing. The one quirky thing I've learned with frozen zucchini, like you just mentioned, I shred it and freeze it, but it does get watery, is that works really well in egg rolls. So that's my one thing I freeze my zucchini for.
Okay. Do you use salt at all?
I don't use salt. No, okay.
Della, you either?
No. I grate it up in the food processor and put it in a bag and freeze it. Mm-hmm. That's the main way for saving it, unless I cook something and just freeze the whole item.
Yeah, that's what I do too. And it's great. I put them in the cup portion so I can use them in zucchini bread. So it's much easier that way. So, okay. Up next, we have Tina and Madison. Hi, Tina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We have a lot of extra zucchini, of course, and also are getting a lot of cucumbers that are pretty large. And I was wondering if you have a method for creating pickles where you're slicing up larger cucumbers and keeping them crispy. I've had a hard time with that in the past. I know those small pickling cucumbers are easier, but I don't know about slicing them up. I was wondering if you had tried that.
Do either of you
slice them? Mm-hmm. For the big cucumbers, I would cut them in half and get all the seeds and middle part out, and then you've got the firm cucumber left. Chop that up for a relish or something like that, or a mixture of vegetables. It's good with cabbage in a relish. But yeah, there's an overabundance.
Yeah. There's a recipe via extension. We also have it in our Farmstead Chef cookbook for freezer pickles, which I have a soft spot for. They're super easy because you basically just can slice any size of cucumbers. There's a vinegar sugar mixture and some onions. You let it sit in the fridge for about a week, and then you just pack it into freezer containers. And it stays surprisingly crisp, so that's a lovely side in the winter.
A couple tips for crispness. Use the freshest cucumbers you can. If they've been sitting around for a while, they're probably going to be mushy pickles. Mm-hmm. And also, you can put a grape leaf or cherry leaf into your jar with your pickles, and that helps make them stay crunchy.
Really? Well, that's interesting. Do you know why?
The tannin, I think.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Like my neighbor came over on Sunday pounding on my door, and I didn't apparently go there quick enough, and she was yelling for me to come out. She's got these two cucumbers in her hands and this frantic look on her face. I've got too many cucumbers. Don't you want any?
She just tried to pass off two. You're lucky.
Just two. I'm like, well, those are gone really fast, so hopefully she'll bring me some more.
The other thing I've done with cucumbers, right now we're in that overload phase, and if you're tired of pickles, is I've juiced them. So basically just peeled them, deseeded them, put them in the food processor in my case, and then froze that juice, which is surprisingly, again, refreshing in the winter. Mm-hmm. It makes a nice gimlet, and it's a way to, again, go through a lot of pickles at once, and it's a base for other things into the winter.
Okay. We had Chris from Adams call in to say that you can get a pH kit at any pool or aquarium store to check your pH in your canning. You just stick the little paper strip into the liquid. She said it's inexpensive and handy. And any thoughts on pH kits, soil sisters?
Oh, I have one. I have one that you calibrate. But yeah, it's super important to keep your pH, test a jar in every batch and make sure it's what it needs to be.
Okay. So for people who are hearing this and thinking, oh, I would like to try canning, what is your best tip for them to do to prepare and to have a good experience?
Well, one thing is it takes a little while. I mean, I've done this the hard way, like started canning tomatoes at 8 o'clock at night, and it takes a couple hours. You're not on the whole time, you know, you're batching, you can do other things, but I have split batches. So I, for example, will cut up the tomatoes and onions in the evening and then process the next morning, keep them in the fridge overnight. But allocate some time. Keep it fun. You know, do it on a Sunday afternoon or wherever you're looking for something to do. But don't rush it.
Make sure you have everything you need. Oh, you know, yeah. have the proper canner. You can't just put the jars in a pot. You've got to have a basket. Make sure that you've got the, what do you call it, the funnel thing, that so you don't make thing. Such a you don't make such a big mess when you're trying to fill the jars.
Canning funnel, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's just some tools that make it a lot easier, and then you're not as frustrated. Pack your jars full. Pack them tight.
And go ahead.
Probably your best option too is to find a canner in your community who will be happy to invite you over, and then you can see it in action. You can do it and ask questions at the same time, and then you'll be ready to go.
Yeah, get a jar lifter too.
A jar lifter. Oh yes, a good jar lifter. Okay, real quick again. Soil Sisters Weekend.
Yep, it's coming up next weekend, August 3rd through 5th. SoilSistersWI.org. We're a project of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. There's a lot of different ways to come out and see our farms. A variety of over 20 on-farm workshops, and there's culinary events, and we kick things off on Friday, August 3rd with one of our Moses in Her Boots workshops at Raleigh's Hillside Farm with Lauren Rudersdorf in Broadhead. That's our way for women who are particularly interested in wanting to start their own farm operation or harbor this dream of starting their salsa company or anything related to food, a warm welcome to come, because that's how we get things started.
Perfect. You had that memorized. I appreciate that. Lisa Della, thank you so much for being with us today. We've been talking with Lisa Kivarist of In Serendipity Farm and Della Enns of Scotch Hill Farm. Innisfree Farmstay, I think I got that right. Both are involved in the upcoming Soil Sister Celebration, again, August 3rd through the 5th. We're going to be talking about land conservancy next. Hope you can stay with us on the Ideas Network.